Moreover, many older Americans, who lacked sympathy for any of those causes, came to oppose the war because it was revealed as the fount of systematic deceits by their own government, and also seemed doomed to fail. The 1975 fall of Saigon represented a humiliation for the planet's most powerful nation. Peasant revolutionaries had prevailed over American will, wealth, and hardware. The silhouetted stairway up which on the evening of the 29th of April fugitives ascended to a helicopter as if towards Calvary secured a place among the symbolic images of that era. Vietnam exercised greater cultural influence upon its times than has any other conflict since 1945. The merits of rival causes are never absolute. Even in the Second World War, the Western Allied struggle against fascism was compromised by its reliance upon the tyranny of Stalin to pay most of the blood price for destroying the tyranny of Hitler. Only simpletons of the political right and left dare to suggest that in Vietnam either side possessed a monopoly of virtue. The authors of all the authoritative works about the conflict are American or French. More than a few of the former write as if it was their own nation's story. Yet this was predominantly an Asian tragedy, upon which a US nightmare was overlaid. Around 40 Vietnamese perished for every American. Although my narrative is chronological, I have not attempted to chronicle or even mention every action, but instead sought to capture the nature of Vietnam's experience through three decades. As in all my books, while relating the political and strategic tale, I also try to answer the question, what was the war like? For Northern sappers, Mekong Delta peasants, Huey pilots from Peoria, grunts from Sioux Falls, air defense advisors from Leningrad, Chinese railway workers, bar girls in Saigon. I was born in 1945. As a youthful correspondent, I lived for almost 2 years in America and later repeatedly visited Indochina. My understanding was so meagre, my perceptions so callow, that in the text that follows I shall not allude to personal experiences, instead summarising them here. In 1967-68, I travelled widely in the US, first on a journalistic study fellowship and latterly as a reporter during the presidential election campaign. I had brief encounters with many of the major players, including Robert Kennedy, Richard Nixon, Eugene McCarthy, Barry Goldwater, Hubert Humphrey, Ronald Reagan, and Harrison Salisbury, Norman Mailer, Allen Ginsberg, Joan Baez. In January 1968, I was among a group of foreign journalists who visited the White House. Seated in the cabinet room, we were harangued for 40 minutes by President Lyndon Johnson about his commitment to Vietnam, weeks before he stunned the American people by announcing that he would not run for re-election. That morning, his personality seemed no less formidable for being close to the caricature. "Some of you like blondes, some of you like redheads, and some of you maybe don't like women at all," he declared in that deadweight drawl, gesticulating constantly to emphasize his points and making broad pencil strokes on a notepad before him. "I'm here to tell you what kind I like. I'm prepared to meet Ho Chi Minh anytime in a nice hotel with nice food, and we can sit down and talk to settle this thing." After making his pitch, this big man left the room abruptly without taking questions, merely loosing a Parthian shaft at anti-war columnist Walter Lippmann. We had risen and were gathering our notes when suddenly the president put his head round the door again. "Now, before you all go," he said, almost coyly, "I want to ask, do any of you feel any different from anything you read or heard about me before you came?" We were stunned into inarticulacy by this glimpse of Johnson's awesome vulnerability. In 1970, I presented a series of reports for BBC TV's 24 Hours programme from Cambodia and Vietnam